Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome into this edition of the Chi-Town Hockey Podcast for this Tuesday, May 26th, 2020. I'm your host, Jake Golden. We have a couple different things to talk about today on today's podcast, including Gary Bettman officially announcing the return-to-play plan, the draft lottery plan, the official release of the Phase 2 return-to-play plan, deeper analysis of the 24-team format approval. I'll discuss Blackhawks playoff hockey and why I think they can win at least two playoff rounds, why the NHL and NHLPA changed the play-in format in fear of Patrick Kane. I'll talk about how Jim Montgomery turned his life around and what his future plans are in hockey and why he'd be a good fit in Chicago, along with why the Canes and Bolts voted no to the 24-team format. And I'll answer a few listener questions toward the end of the episode. I know that's a lot. I hope you all enjoy it. But before we dive into that, I want to tell you all how to get in touch with the podcast or ask any questions. The Instagram is at chitownhockey.pod. Blackhawks-related Instagram is at blackhawks.zone. The Twitter account is at chitownpod. You can follow my personal Twitter account at jakegolden777. And the email is chitownhockeypod@gmail.com. Alright, so here we go. First, I'll discuss the playoff slash play-in and round-robin matchups. So, the round-robin, basically the top four teams in each conference will play round-robin games to determine their seeding in the 16-team playoffs, and the top team will win the number one seed. And if I had to guess, it would most likely be the number one plays four and two plays three. And Gary Bettman even announced that he wanted to include a round robin because he didn't want an unfair advantage to play-in teams playing games and getting ready before the round robin teams. So with that said, here are the four teams from each conference in the West. We have the number one, St. Louis, number two, Colorado, number three, Vegas, and number four, Dallas. In the East, we have number one, Boston, number two, Tampa Bay, number three, Washington, number four, Philadelphia. Then in the play-in series, which are confirmed to be best of five, here are the matchups. In the West, we have number five, Edmonton, versus our very own number 12, Chicago Blackhawks. Number six, Nashville, versus number 11, Arizona. Number seven, Vancouver, versus number 10, Minnesota. Number eight, Calgary, versus number nine, Winnipeg. Then in the East, we have number five, Pittsburgh, versus number 12, Montreal. Number 6, Carolina versus number 11, New York Rangers. Number 7, New York Islanders versus the number 10, Florida Panthers. Number 8, Toronto versus number 9, Columbus. Okay, so now that you have those matchups, I'll go ahead and read you all the main points on how the return is going to work. I'll get to the return-to-play format first, and then I'll get to the draft lottery a couple segments later. I'm going to go ahead and start with the main points that Gary Bettman just released minutes ago on NBCSN, TSN, or wherever you watched his announcement. So to start off, he says, health and safety are paramount. Fans and players want the NHL to resume, but they wouldn't start without guidance from civil and medical authorities. There is definitely going to need to be NHL and NHLPA partnership and cooperation. And the playoffs need to include competition, tradition, and integrity. Then, for the basic return-to-play playoff bracket, 24 clubs will resume play, top 12 in each conference by points percentage at pause or on March 12th. 2019-2020 regular season is now complete, so there will be no regular season games. Each conference is going to be assigned a hub city with secure hotels, a secure arena, practice facilities, and in-market transportation. Then each team is limited to 50 personnel in their hub city, a small number of support staff permitted in event areas. And then there will be a comprehensive system of testing. Players will be tested regularly. And then to get into the phases, phase two, early June, which is in the next couple of days, which I will discuss in the next couple of minutes, clubs will return to home facilities for voluntarily small group on and off ice training. Phase 3 will then include a formal training camp, which will take place no earlier than July 1st. Phase 4 then will be clubs in two hub cities for conference-based round robins, qualifying rounds, and the Stanley Cup playoffs, and then timing and sites are to be determined. But he did list multiple hub cities that are under consideration, first one being our very own Chicago, Illinois, Columbus, Ohio, Dallas, Texas, Edmonton, Alberta, Las Vegas, Nevada, Los Angeles, California, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Toronto, Ontario, and Vancouver, British Columbia. In each conference seeded by points percentage, the round robin will be top four teams play for first round seeding, regular season, overtime, and shootout rules will apply for the round robin, so it will not be continuous overtime like in the typical Stanley Cup playoffs. It will be those regular season rules. The qualifying round will be the remaining eight teams will play best of five series to advance to the first round of the 16-team playoff bracket, and that will include the typical playoff continuous overtime. The Stanley Cup playoffs then will consist of conference-based playoffs, bracket format, or each round will be determined by seeding. Qualifying round winners play top seeds in first round. The first round, second round will be best of five or best of seven, that is undecided, and the conference finals, Stanley Cup final, will both definitely be best of seven. So to wrap all that up, here are the couple of main points as the NHL announces the return to play plan for 1920. The 24 teams will restart play and compete for the Stanley Cup. Round robin, top four teams in each conference will play for first round seeding. Qualifying round, remaining eight teams play best of five series to advance to the first round. Then, first and second round, format and series length are to be determined. Conference final, Stanley Cup final, definitely best of seven series, and games will be played in two hub cities. Okay, so there you have the main points of the NHL's return to play plan from Gary Bettman. He talked about the phases a little bit, and like I said, I want to get into phase two, as they did just release a 22-page report describing what phase two of the return to play plan would look like. I'm not going to go ahead and read the whole thing to you because obviously, duh, it's 22 pages. But here are a few of the highlights. So workouts can be held at team facilities, as Gary Bettman did point out. A six-player maximum is allowed when conducting a quote-unquote team workout. The six players are allowed to use the gyms and workout areas, but are not allowed to have spotters present, so they must do exercises that they can do alone. And finally, players are supposed to wear face masks when walking around the team facilities, but don't need to wear one on the ice or during workouts, because obviously that would impair their breathing ability. As most of you should know, this is obviously good news, but hockey can't obviously return until phase four, so it's still not back yet. So the next phase, obviously phase three, would be that mini formal training camp for about 2 to 3 weeks. When that starts, we don't know, but we do know it won't be before July 1st. But at least we do have a slimmer of hope here, with a certain amount of players now being able to practice with each other, that the NHL will resume. Okay, so I want to now get into the approval of the 24-team format. As it was breaking news in my last episode, the NHL has approved the 24-team return-to-play format and will allow future talks with the NHLPA. Ladies and gentlemen, this means your Chicago Blackhawks are playoff-bound for the first time since 2017. On a good note, the acting DHS U.S. Secretary officially passed a bill that exempts all foreign players from United States travel restrictions, which is definitely helpful for foreign NHL players and getting the NHL started back up again. On another good note, Calvin DeHaan and Drake Kajula are likely to return for this year's playoffs, which means your defense is already better. And who knows, maybe you slide in Ian Mitchell in there too. Get him going with the team during that mini training camp, and who knows, maybe he pulls off what Cale Makar did last year. Some other injuries to talk about. We have Andrew Shaw, who is not likely to play, but no update on him yet. Zach Smith is questionable, and Brent Seabrook is not likely to play. But even then, already you get back two big guys, and actually number one defenseman in Calvin DeHaan and a big grinder in Drake Cajula. But Calvin DeHaan, he could come back in all fixed up, better than ever, and man, the Hawks could make a push. Up until his injury, he was looking like a number one defenseman. Not too old, not too young, right there in the Goldilocks. He can play defense, and that is what the Blackhawks need. If he returns, we actually could win a good number of games. But there's one thing that will probably need to be discussed, and that is those injuries. There are still many questions on the table that need to be answered, because who knows? If the Blackhawks ruled these players out for the year, and same thing with other teams, should those players be allowed to come back for this expanded and delayed playoffs? Because if they, let alone, can't return for the normal playoffs, then why would they be allowed to return to these playoffs, especially when their team wasn't even supposed to make it? But if they can return, it will help the Hawks a ton, and will increase their chance of winning. Because, I mean, upsets happen. You saw Tampa Bay last year. Nobody expected them to get swept. No one. But in the playoffs, all bets are off. Anything can happen, and that's been proved not just last year, but even in years past. And who knows? The Blackhawks have a great playoff experienced goalie in Corey Crawford. You have multiple guys with playoff experience: Taves, Kane, Saad, DeHaan with Carolina, Duncan Keith, Seabrook if he's back, but it's not likely, Shaw if he's back, again, not likely, and then Ryan Carpenter with San Jose and Vegas. So it's not like they don't have experienced guys who can play playoff hockey. It's just the young guys that need to find their groove and realize this is playoff hockey for the Stanley Cup. We need to work our asses off here, put in the work, and maybe the Hawks don't make it to the final or the West final, but hey, they could win two rounds maybe. Edmonton and Dallas, we can beat. The young players just need to find their will, and the older ones, the veterans, need to step up in the leadership aspect and help this team and help lead this team and these younger guys. I'll talk about this a little bit later in the podcast, but even if the Hawks win one round, or even none, maybe it'll still be a good learning experience for the younger guys. It'll help them develop and gain that experience of playoff hockey, and what it's like to win a series, or play a team multiple times in a row. And it'll be good for Jeremy Colliton to get a coach at least four playoff games, or in this case it'll be three because it's a best of five. Maybe that'll help him in his development as a coach, as an NHL coach, and help his scouting of other teams after looking at one team for multiple games in a row and finding what he needs. Overall, I think even if this doesn't go the Blackhawks' way and they can't make it to the next round or two rounds on or whatever it might be, the team and the staff can still benefit from playing playoff hockey. And also, please make sure to note, everything I've said, this doesn't mean the season is resuming. This means that if the season resumes, this is what will be taking place, and this is what will be happening, and this is the outline that the NHL is going to follow if it does happen to resume. Alright, I said I'll discuss the draft lottery, and it's a little in-depth what Gary Bettman is saying, but really it is just a lot of information. So I'll go ahead and list exactly what Gary Bettman said in case you missed it today on NBCSN. So he said possible two phases. There will be a pre-qualifying round, which will be held on June 26th, and then a post-qualifying round if necessary. So 15 clubs will be eligible to win first three overall selections. 7 clubs that do not resume play, and then the 8 clubs eliminated in the qualifying round. Phase 2 will then be between qualifying round and first round. Any Phase 1 draw not won by a non-resuming club will be conducted among clubs eliminated in the qualifying round. Once the top 3 picks are determined, remaining clubs will be slotted in reverse order of 19-20 points percentage. Okay, so the 8 clubs eliminated, you have the 7 teams that were not resuming play, and those 8 clubs will slot into the 8 to 15 spots and will each receive a fair 12.5 or 1/8 of a chance to earn the 8th spot. And as you go down the list, as those teams are slotted in, the odds to win the lottery do drop. Here are the odds as you move down. At 1, you obviously have Detroit with the worst points percentage, has the best odds at 18.5. 2 goes to 13.5. 3, 11.5. 4 is 9.5. 5, 8.5. 6 is 7.5. 7 is 6.5. 8, 6%. 9, 5%. 10, 3.5%. 11 is 3%. 12 is 2.5%, 13 is 2%, 14 is 1.5%, and 15 is 1%. So it looks like to me that a good amount of thought actually did go into this, and it looks like it has integrity, and it will work out well like it does every year with the 15 teams that end up not making the 16-team playoffs. So if the Blackhawks do lose in the play-in, at least we have the chance to draft higher than 5, which is what was predicted to be the highest the Hawks could draft. Okay, so it was reported that the NHL and the NHLPA changed the play-in round in the 2014 playoff format from a best-of-3 series to a best-of-5. Why? In fear of Patrick Kane and Carey Price. Obviously, Kane with the Hawks would play the Oilers in the play-in, and Carey Price and the Canadiens would play the Penguins in the play-in. And when I see why players would be afraid. Patrick Kane can get hot. He can go on a run. He can score back-to-back hat-tricks or have back-to-back two-goal games. Same thing with Carey Price. All he has to do is stand on his head for 2 games and the Pens are out. And I agree with the decision to change the game amount because, yeah, only 2 games. Patrick Kane can play very well for 2 games. Price can play great for just 2 games. But here with the best of 5, you at least have a better chance to come back after 2 games with that extra 3rd game. Yeah, it isn't the best of 7, but you already have to fit these play-ins on top of those 4 other best of 7 rounds. So is it perfect? No, obviously not. You're not going to please everybody, but it's fairer than the best of 3 would be. Because in the best of 3, all you have to do is win 2 games. And even teams without Kane or Price, they can go on a 2-game run and end another team's season within 72 hours if games are only, say, 1 day apart, those players are only getting 1 day of rest. So I see where the players are coming from when they say it's not fair, but I think that this best of 5 is fairer than that best of 3. But I just don't think about whoever wanted the best of 7, I don't think it would work out because you're already going to be playing into the summer. So you have to get these playoff series done and finished so that way you can start next season on time and do all the events for next season on time. All right, thank you guys for listening to the Chi-Town Hockey Podcast. I will be back with you guys in 60 seconds or less. Alright, let's talk Blackhawks playoff hockey. It actually kind of feels weird to say that, I have to admit. So some of you know who follow my Instagram account at blackhawks.zone know that in the past few days I have become a writer / analyst for Phenom Media, and I wrote an article the other day titled Hot Take: The Blackhawks Will Win 2 Playoff Series, Here's Why. And I wanted to discuss this a little bit on the podcast, but before I get into that, I want to talk about the Hawks-Oilers series. This is going to be great, honestly. 2 of the best players in the NHL in McDavid and Draisaitl. Then you have Patrick Kane, Jonathan Toews, even Alex Brinkett, a superstar rookie, and Dominic Kubalik. All these guys can score, and that's what will make this series so great to watch. So I'm really looking forward to watching this playoff series. I think this is going to be great for the fans, great for the players, even great for the National Hockey League. Now to get into that article I wrote. We all know the Blackhawks have experienced veterans. We all know that. And even though they've gotten older and it's been 5 years since a championship, 5 years since they won a playoff series, we know these guys can still play. Guys like Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, Duncan Keith. I even mentioned Calvin DeHaan with Carolina and Carpenter with Vegas and San Jose earlier in the podcast and in my article. And when I look at all these guys, they can all help the team in different ways. And they do it tremendously. Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane can produce, as we all know. Duncan Keith can still be a number one defenseman. Calvin DeHaan, up until his injury, was looking like a top two defenseman, a top pairing defenseman. And one thing I pointed out in this article is the Blackhawks have not had that since they traded away Nicholas Hjalmarsson in 2017. And you look at the role Nicholas Hjalmarsson played in those cup runs. If he wasn't there, who knows where we'd be. And he was a massively underrated guy, because defensive defensemen usually are. And that is something we have not had in a while. That top two defensemen to play alongside Duncan Keith. What the basic fan looks at is the typical stat line, goals, assists, and points. They don't look at Corsi, Fenwick, or even the blocked shots count. But getting back to Calvin DeHaan, he can be that guy. Maybe not Nicholas Hjalmarsson. He was the best defensive defenseman in the league for those years at a time. But he can fill that role of that second top two defenseman or top pairing defenseman, like I said. That's a position that the Blackhawks have needed, and now that they have that guy, if he can stay healthy and he can keep his shoulder healthy, it'll help the Blackhawks keep the puck out of the net. And Ryan Carpenter, he's been in the league for a little bit, and he's a great defensive forward. He's a great penalty killer. And if you want to win in the playoffs, you have to have good special teams. Now, getting on to more the team aspect of why the Blackhawks can win two playoff series. They can play. They can. The Blackhawks can play. They can win. They can. We've seen it last year, a 7-game winning streak. This year, a 4-game winning streak. They can win 4 of 5 or 3 of 5 games. But the whole team has to want it. The veterans, they cannot lean on the young guys to want it, to want to win. And the young guys also cannot lean on the veterans to perform. It needs to be a team effort with everybody contributing here. And if they can do that, and Corey Crawford can step up like he has in the past couple of years in the playoffs, and even in the regular season this year, the Blackhawks could upset a few teams, and they could go far. I truly believe that. On paper, if everyone is healthy, even on paper with getting Calvin DeHaan and Drake Caggiula back, this is not a terrible team. They can get the job done. Like I said, we've seen it. And it'll be very interesting to watch what the Blackhawks can do in the playoffs. So you heard me talk about how I just joined Phenom Media. It would be greatly appreciated by me and by them if you all could go check out their website, phenommedia.net. Their Instagram page is at Phenom Media. The Twitter account is at Phenom Media Net. Again, the website, phenommedia.net. Go check it out. You can go ahead and check out my articles. Show them some support. All my articles will just be under my name, Jake Golden. It's all teams for whichever sport you like. All teams in that league. All youth analysts. So make sure to go check them out. Show them some support. Check out my articles. I hope you guys really enjoy what they have there. Enjoy what I'm putting on there. Make sure that everybody's work isn't going to waste. So once again, website at phenommedia.net. Go ahead and check it out. Check out my articles and give them some support. So to finally get off the topic, a little bit of news on the NHL and the playoffs and the return to play and all that stuff for a bit, I wanted to share with you some of my thoughts on a recent article written by Pierre LeBrun on The Athletic titled, "Former Stars Coach Jim Montgomery on his firing Alcoholism and Recovery. I wanted to share this a bit and talk about it because I really enjoyed this article, and it was actually pretty moving. So if you're unaware of who Jim Montgomery is or why he was fired, he is the former coach of the Dallas Stars. He was fired in December. His last game he coached for the Stars was December 7th. He was fired for what they described as unprofessional conduct. It was then revealed later that he was an alcoholic and that he couldn't learn how to control himself for many years, even in his playing days, especially on the road when it came to drinking. In this article, he actually expressed his appreciation to the Stars general manager, Jim Neal, for actually firing him. And he stated, "Jim Neal is a great man. He had a couple of talks with me about his concern." So obviously, he's saying that he appreciated Jim Neal. He realized he let him down. He realized that he let his players down. He let the whole league down. He didn't represent what the Dallas Stars and the NHL, what they're about. He even said in the article he needed the Stars to fire him. Because that is when he realized he had the problem, being let go from his job. He said he even felt the guilt he had for putting the Stars in that spot, putting his family in that spot. He needed the Stars to fire him, so he had to go home and tell his family that he was fired because he was an alcoholic. You could see when Jim Neal announced the firing, he was upset, he was disturbed, and he really didn't want to be there making that announcement. Something that even touched me in the article was Jim saying, "It's hard to tell your sons that you have a disease and you're an alcoholic," which even outside of hockey is pretty saddening. But getting back to the hockey side, he's excited now because he's wide open to talk to. He's been sober for 5 months. He's opened a new chapter in his life and is ready to become a better coach. But in the article, Pierre LeBrun, he states that he expects that if Jim Montgomery returned to the NHL, it would most likely be as an assistant coach, or he could go back to coaching college. And for those of you who didn't know, he coached the University of Denver from 2013 to 2018 before being offered the Dallas Stars job. But that leads me to my next point. Could the Blackhawks hire him? Honestly, could they? Obviously, they wouldn't fire Jeremy Colleton, but if he even wants to return as an assistant coach, could the Blackhawks bring him in? Obviously, I would keep Mark Crawford because he has years of coaching experience. I would keep Sheldon Brookbank because he has coached with Colleton in Rockford. He even played for the Blackhawks, so he has relationships with some of the older players, and he knows how the organization works. But I would dump Tomas Mitel. In his first year coaching in America, he's been working with the forwards in the power play. But if you bring in Jim Montgomery, a former head coach who had good success with the Stars, good offensive success with the Stars, to do the same job but better, then I'd do it. You can upgrade. If you have a chance to upgrade, then upgrade. If the only thing he can get is a position as an assistant coach, then upgrade. Then upgrade the position. Make your team better. Then the fact that he was a head coach, he can certainly help players more and help Jeremy Colleton a lot. Because Jeremy Colleton stated at the beginning of the season he didn't want to miss a good idea. And I'm sure Jim Montgomery, being a head coach, will have a lot of them. But certainly let me know what you guys would think if the Blackhawks made this move. Go ahead and send those emails to shytownhockeypod@gmail.com. I want to hear your thoughts on this. I want to hear what you guys think of this, and I will try my best to share them on the show when the next one does come out. So it is reported that the Carolina Hurricanes and the Tampa Bay Lightning both voted no to the 2014 return to play playoff format. I'll read you both statements from each of those teams' representatives, Jordan Martinook from the Carolina Hurricanes and Alex Korn from the Tampa Bay Lightning. So Carolina Hurricanes representative Jordan Martinook stated, "From where we were and where our team thought we could get to, it hurts our odds, but it's not like we don't want to play." And I have to agree with what Jordan Martinook was saying, because I believe the Canes are playing the Rangers in the play-in. And when the season was paused, the Rangers were rolling. They were fighting for a playoff spot, but they weren't in that playoff spot yet, and there were only 12 games remaining. It could have happened, but chances were slim. So I see where the Carolina Hurricanes are coming from, because the Rangers were, I don't want to say they weren't likely to make the playoffs, but it was probably not going, the odds weren't exactly in their favor. So I do see where the Carolina Hurricanes are coming from, but I just really don't know what they were really expecting to get out of voting no, as the NHL and the NHLPA had already kind of settled on this. Alright, so here is Alex Korn on why Tampa Bay actually voted no to the 2014 playoffs. The teams at the bottom will be playing playoff games right away and will be potentially more prepared for the real playoffs. Alright, again, this is certainly a valid point from Alex Korn on why this format may be unfair, and he's right. If Tampa gets a bye, same thing with other teams such as St. Louis and Boston, they won't be playing playoff hockey until that first round series. But the teams that are worse, some teams that wouldn't have even made the playoffs had the season not been paused, are able to get in a rhythm and win games and come into the actual 16-team playoffs on a roll and win a few games while the team with the bye is still rusty because all they still had was training camp and no actual game action. But this statement was made a couple days ago, and with Gary Bettman just speaking about an hour ago, he said these teams will play round robin. He didn't say when, but I'd have to guess they'd be played at around the same time as the play-ins are. But for now, the 2014 format was passed, and the Lightning and the Canes are going to have to live with it, just like the Penguins are going to have to deal with playing Carey Price in Montreal, or the Maple Leafs will have to play Columbus, who we've seen can get on the roll. So it's not like the Canes and Bolts whose odds are thrown off here. It's all teams. And now you have to look at Alex Korn's statement with Gary Bettman just speaking. I have to say, is Tampa Bay happy now? Because he just said they're going to be playing those round-robin games. So are they happy? Is that all they wanted? So it's all teams that are going to be affected by this. And nobody wanted this to happen. The suspension of the season, the expanded playoffs. But it's what had to happen. Even going outside of hockey, nobody wanted coronavirus to pop up here in the United States of America. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted a government shutdown. Nobody. Nobody wanted the current situation we're in. Nobody wanted to go into an unprecedented state that the United States has never seen before. Nobody wanted that. So, you know what? If the Canes and Lightning are the only two teams that are going to vote no, then you know what? That just sucks for them. Honestly, it does. Because they're just going to have to deal with it. They just are. Okay, so I know I discussed a lot of things on this episode, a lot of stuff that maybe you're still trying to get your head around, but I wanted to make sure I got to a few listener questions that I got. So to start off, Randy Erickson on Facebook, he says, as a lifelong Hawks fan, I would like to know what kind of dirt Bowman has that allows him to keep his job. He should have been fired long before Q. All right, thank you for the question, Randy. So what I think is Rocky knows John McDonough was directing Stan. He knows that Stan Bowman wasn't the one all responsible for the downfall of the Chicago Blackhawks. I don't exactly think it's dirt that he has. I think it's the fact that Rocky isn't dumb. He isn't stupid. He isn't an idiot. He realizes that it wasn't Stan, or it wasn't all Stan. And I think that's why John McDonough was fired days ago and Bowman wasn't. I think Stan Bowman, when he fired Quenneville, was trying to use that get-out-of-jail-free card with McDonough. Like, oh, the coach is the problem, so he wouldn't end up being fired by McDonough. So that way it then doesn't look like McDonough was the reason for the Blackhawks' downfall, if you guys get what I'm saying there. It's kind of hard to understand, but basically, I think Rocky just isn't an idiot. He realizes Stan Bowman was being directed by John McDonough, and that it was time for John McDonough to go. Alright, so next question here I got from Dean Arbuckle on Facebook. Which player from Rockford in the AHL would you say has the best chance to be a full-time NHLer in the future? Alright, so thank you for the question, Dean. So if I'm looking at current Rockford players from this season, I believe that Matthew Highmore has a decent chance of becoming a full-time NHLer because when he was up this year, he actually did show some good attributes. Stan then even re-signed him to a 3-year deal, I believe. And I believe it's that last year of his deal that is a one-way contract in the NHL. So the Hawks and Stan Bowman obviously think he has something to give to the Blackhawks in the NHL. However, the only reason he was up in the NHL was because of the injuries. So maybe in the time that he was up, he was able to prove something to Stan Bowman. And Stan Bowman liked what he saw. John McDonough liked what he saw before he was fired. Jeremy Colleton even liked what he saw. And they decided to re-sign him. So if I'm looking at Rockford players that were regular AHL players, I'm going with Matthew Highmore. Alright, so last question here is from Colin Farrow on Facebook. How much longer are the Hawks going to be under salary cap issues? Alright, so this one for me is actually a very quick answer. Until the Brent Seabrook contract is over. That is what I honestly believe. Because they can't sign good players because they signed Brent Seabrook to a contract that better players should be signed to. And honestly, he's just not the good player that he used to be. But who knows if he comes back better after these surgeries, like I talked about in the last episode. If you haven't heard that, make sure to go check that out. If he comes better, if he comes back better than he was after having these surgeries, getting everything fixed up, maybe he can play to that extent where he's making almost $7 million a year. And he can contribute to the Blackhawks. But if he's not playing like that almost $7 million player that he was signed to be in 2015, then that contract is useless. And the Blackhawks are going to be cap-strapped for a long time up until, what, I think his contract ends in 2024, which Kane and Taze will then, their contracts will be over, so those duplicate $10.5 million AAV contracts will be off the books. So those bigger contracts for your star players, they're going to start to slow down as they get older. Maybe re-sign them to deals that aren't as big as those $10.5 million deals. And then maybe you can afford to make a couple of moves to better your team. But then also by then you're going to have Kirby Dach who's going to need to be re-signed. And if he becomes a good player, then He's going to be earning some cash. Dominic Kubalik, if they sign him to, say, a 1-2-3-year deal, he's going to have to be re-signed then. If he continues to be the player that he showed he can be this year, then he's going to be earning some money. Dylan Strom, if he's signed to a $3 million AAV deal this summer, it's probably not going to be for that long, probably 3 years. If he isn't traded in those couple of years, he's going to need to be re-signed. And if he develops and plays better, he's going to need money. But I think it's those couple of million dollars that will come off the books when Kane and Taves, their annual average value goes down as their age goes up and their play decreases. Same thing with Brent Seabrook. If he's not shipped out by then, that's truly when I believe the Hawks will no longer be cap-strapped, is when their veterans' deals expire and their play starts to go down and the youngsters' plays start to trend upward, and they can kind of level it out like they did in the dynasty area. They can level out the deals, and maybe if they get good, they can, like the New England teams, like I talked about in episode 6, my interview with Ethan Kahn, where they can have players buy in to a system where they're not paying them as much money as they'd like to be preferably paid. So maybe they can get that system going in the next couple of years. But yeah, my quick answer is until the Brent Seabrook contract is over, because By that time, Kane and Taze will be out of their contracts. Seabrook will then be out of his contract. Keith will be out of his contract. All if they're re-signed, their AAVs will probably go down as their play goes down. So yeah, that's my quick answer is when the Brent Seabrook contract is over. Alright, so that's going to go ahead and do it for this edition of the Chi-Town Hockey Podcast. I hope you all enjoyed the boatloads of news we had for today. I want to all make sure you guys remember how to get in touch with the podcast or ask any listener questions. Twitter, at Chi-Town Pod. Instagram, at ChiTownHockey.pod. My Blackhawks and NHL-related Instagram account is at BlackhawksZone. Make sure you go check that out and follow that. Not just Blackhawks news, got all kinds of NHL news on there for you guys if you're interested in any other teams. My personal Twitter account, at JakeGolden777, mainly hockey-based on there. Make sure to go check that out. And the email is ChiTownHockeyPod@gmail.com. Once again, I hope you all did really enjoy this episode. Thank you guys for tuning in, as always, and make sure to have a great rest of your Tuesday.